when ChatGPT came out, you know, we were hearing and everybody jumped on the bandwagon of, oh, you know, garbage in, garbage out, and the prompts have to be carefully stated and the questions are, you know, and I think that was true in the beginning. But, you know, it's a learning technology, right? So as it learned more about me through what it can, what it has access to, which is everything out there, I just literally talk to it like it's a person. I don't, I don't try to worry about my prompts or anything like that. I just, I mean, I'll type in a full paragraph and say, what is your thoughts on this? And literally it will, it does make it better, because it'll analyze based on what it knows about me or my work.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Sharon Spano. She is the founder of Spano & Company, Inc. She works with high impact leaders to help them be better leaders for themselves, their businesses, and their families. Welcome to the show, Sharon.
Thank you so much, Kenny. It's great to be here today.
Well, I'm excited to have this conversation. We had a really fun, like, pre-meeting chat, lots of energy. So I have no doubt that today is going to be more of the same. But tell me today, what is on your mind?
Well, probably like a lot of people in the country, for sure, if not the world, a lot of things are on my mind. But in terms of my business right now, I am thinking quite a bit about a new podcast that I'm launching. I'm pivoting my podcast that I had forever and ever. I just needed a change. And so we spent about 3 months figuring out the direction of the new podcast. And then I woke up on January 30th and went, nope, that's not the podcast. So I spent a lot of time rethinking it, and it's a little unnerving for me because it's something I'm passionate about, something I've wanted to do that I kept thinking I would fit in later when I had time, but of course that's not happening. And the only concern I have is that it doesn't perfectly align with my work, and I'm worried it might confuse people, although the nuances of it align very much with my deeper transformational work. So we'll see. It should be launched in about 4 weeks.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, pivoting anything, especially if you have a long run time on something, doing it a certain way, you're like, well, do it. It's not broken, but I want to innovate.
Yeah.
Have you had many of those moments throughout your career and your work where it's like, hey, things are going well, but I see maybe things shifting in the world, the things with my clients shifting, and we need to make a pivot in order to better serve this community, this audience, these clients. How have you navigated that in the past?
It's such a great question, because sometimes we have to pivot, like COVID. I think we all had to pivot, right? But then sometimes it's just like you're changing as a human being, you're transforming, and you realize, you know, what I was doing before, I don't really feel like doing anymore. And so, yeah, I had several of those in my career. And usually it requires, you know, a lot of discernment and really listening to the spirit and what's going on with you in those moments. Like for me, you know, when it's happened, I can just give a quick example. When I was doing work in and out of companies for many years, and I was also doing a lot of professional speaking and seminars and things, and I loved that. I loved being in and out of all that. But then the market changed, where then everybody could be a speaker. You know, back when I started, you had to, you know, have X amount of clients, make X amount of money, you know, get certified with the National Speakers Association. And so the game changed, and I changed and realized, you know, I don't want to be on an airplane, you know, 152 days out of the year. So then I had to do a very big pivot. And that's when my consulting practice really deepened. And then, of course, COVID is when my one-on-one executive coaching really, really got much deeper as well. I was doing that before in and out of companies as part of my leadership development work. But with COVID, you know, everything, as we all know, was Zoom. So we created, you know, what is now my 12-week intensive. And I'm so glad I did, because it's been a very profitable and very, you know, really career enhancement for me personally, but I'd like to think I've made a lot of difference for the clients that I've served during this period as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of building the ship while sailing it sort of fun. Sometimes you get put on a ship, sometimes you chose the ship. How, because you are working with such like high level leaders and obviously the, whether it's COVID, AI, or any other big shift that might be industry specific, maybe not a global change. What is the common wisdom or prevailing thinking around change management, pivoting, making those turns, that it's not you become something wildly different, but it's almost like a, I guess, an evolution of sorts of your business or of your leadership as you're working with, you know, individuals and executives?
Yeah, it's such a great question, because I think every individual, every entrepreneur, every company is doing it differently now. I mean, I do strategic planning for businesses. And one of the things that I'm seeing that is very different from what we used to think about was people now are not comfortable planning out. We used to say 10 to 20 years, you know, what's your vision for the company 10 to 20 years? Well, in corporate, you know, leaders are coming and going more often. But even in the entrepreneurial environment, you know, they realize they can't plan out that far because things can change so quickly. I think part of that is, you know, a response to what we all went through, again, the COVID experience. But I think it's also just reality, you know, with AI and the way technology is changing so fast. I think, you know, I encourage my players to at least do 7 to 10 years out, because we have to have something to shoot for. We have to have something to motivate the workforce. And, and we have to have a way to, you know, set metrics around our financial targets. But I think we all realize that, you know, the uncertainty of the political, economic, socioeconomic world means that we need to have systems and processes in place that we can turn on a dime, to be quite honest, if we have to.
Right. Would you, because I see some of the same thing in the clients I work with for strategic planning, is they're like, I don't know if we really even need to look beyond 3 years. I mean, good Lord, right. We couldn't have forecasted we'd be here today 3 years ago. You know, we're just going to, like, you know, put it all in the shredder and start over. Then what's the sense? But I can see the value, and I agree with you, is that those longer horizon goals can really help focus us, pull us together towards something. Do you find that the nature of strategic planning or longer term thinking, that's changed to be more, what are the principles we'd like to achieve or embody at a later date, as opposed to tactically it's X amount of dollars and these sort of, you know, production standards, that it's more of about who we're going to be in the future as opposed to all the many things we're going to do? Has that changed for you, or no. Is everybody still focused on sort of the traditional strategic objectives that far into the future?
What I'm seeing, and I'm recently in the last several years become a part as a facilitator for SummitOS, and you know, you're probably well aware there are many operating systems out there that do this level of work. And why I did that was because the founder, Steve Preda, I think very brilliantly realized that those of us that have been doing strategic planning for many, many years, I think, you know, for me, it got to be a very frustrating process because of what we were just talking about. But I'm also seeing leaders, you know, they're less inclined to want what some will call the fluff, you know, the vision, the values, which we know are foundational and need to be in place, but they want to get to the metrics. And so, and they want to get to what's going to make us profitable, and everybody's in a hurry to do that. What I love about SummitOS is that Steve has created a system that allows us to do both, you know, look at the company why and the vision, we call it the summit vision and things of that nature, but we're kind of reverse engineering the process in a way that gets us to the metrics faster. And so we're looking at, you know, milestones and annual metrics and then down into, you know, of course, monthly and our quarterly and monthly. And I joined this group because I was so impressed with not only the legwork he'd done in inventing it, but also because the system is such that it's easier to facilitate and you get truer, more accurate results for the client. In terms, and in fact, I just finished one out west a couple weeks ago, and one of the players, one of the partners, made the comment. He goes, "We've done this 9 times now, and this is the first time I feel we actually have a strategic plan." You can't get a better compliment than that, right?
Right. Yeah, that's high praise.
Yeah.
Because everybody does strategic planning, but nobody, I've yet to find a group of people who can readily agree on what the heck strategic planning even means or entails.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of different ways to do it. But I mean, I think for me, the foundation, you know, should always include the basics. And then it's a question of, you know, how do you move the group through that? So it's a wonderful process. And I really feel good about when we can deliver, you know, a roadmap that really helps those leaders feel like they have a plan. Because to answer your question, your earlier question, a lot of the issues that we're seeing too, that I'm hearing very consistently, and I'm sure you are as well, is people just can't keep up with the demands mm-hmm. of communication, email, you know, all the stuff. And so if we're not focusing on the most important things by way of a strategic plan, then we're just doing a lot of busy work often. And we may mm-hmm. be creating results, but we're not necessarily positioning ourselves to scale the company.
Right. They could be just random results. It wasn't a bad thing, but if it's a misaligned thing and doesn't right. advance us, then that could be, we would have been better off not doing anything because it didn't really help us move forward. But boy, we sure felt like we were doing something.
Yeah, we were busy.
Yeah, busy or activity instead of impact is a common we conflate the two, and it can be easy even for the best of us to feel like that. Do you think with the change, the noise with just business, whether it's for profit, nonprofit, just growing and leading an organization, having changed, do you think the way in which we need to think about strategic planning, forecasting, not just the tactics of the process and the facilitation. It sounds like those are evolving. SummitOS has been a big help for you and your clients. But do you think some of what is needing to shift, and maybe SummitOS does this, I don't know, is shifting the mindset and our perspective, our orientation to strategic planning, not just the tactics and the act and the agenda of strategic planning?
Well, I know in the context of the work we do, one of the things that has been addressed more directly than in past years when I did strategic planning was we're re-engineering how people are doing their meetings, because that's another major complaint is we just have too many meetings. We can't even get our work done. So that's a part of our process. And then the other piece is, you know, the online portal, because the online portal allows us to build in a level of accountability that you typically don't see. I mean, as you're aware, most strategic plans fail because people don't implement them. And so in short, we have built into this system a way for implementation to be more ensured. And people are excited about that because they're tired also of doing strategic planning that, you know, never comes to fruition.
Yeah. And then that's probably the number one complaint I hear is like, oh, we planned all this. Nobody did anything. And I was like, okay, well, where's your plan? We don't know.
Okay.
You know, it can range from, you know, hey, we need strategy on a page, the one, you know, the one pager philosophy, which I happen to be a fan of, but it could go all the way to, we got a 78 page binder full of documents that, you know, you need a NASA engineer to understand.
Right.
How have you seen that arc of what's included versus not? Because you were talking a lot about the noise that people are experiencing. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine within strategic plans, there's probably been an evolution that you've seen of, hey, I think this is actually noise in our strategic planning. It's not that it's bad or it's dumb, but if it keeps us from utilizing or executing against this plan, then maybe it doesn't belong there. How have you seen that evolve in your work?
Well, I don't know how it's across the board, but I think when we, you know, EOS was one of the first operating systems, and Pinnacle, there's a variety of them out there that came online, mm-hmm. you know, because of technology and as a result of technology in the last, I don't know, 15 plus years. And I think that's changed everything. Again, with Summit, what I love is that Steve has looked at all the best practices out there and made it more easy to implement and still get the same amount of data. But for instance, you know, one area I know we used to get stuck on was the differentiation between vision and values. Vision and mission. Do we need both? How is one different from another? Every consultant has their own point of view on that. And so what we have now that I love, thanks to Simon Sinek, is we focus on the company why. And then the summit vision, as we call it, is really more along an alignment, I would say, with a mission statement. But we try to have a metric with that if possible. And then that's how we reverse engineer and back into the midterm goals, annual goals. And I love that because, again, you know, I always struggled with CEOs and the C-suite wanting to get to those bottom line numbers quicker and not spend, you know, days and weeks on, and also the SWOT analysis has changed. You know, we do it differently. And I think there's opportunities now for us to cut through a lot of the noise with the help of AI. You know, I do something called a DNA assessment on my clients, and I'm using AI to help me analyze the data where we used to, you know, be my team and I going over the transcripts, you know, ad nauseum to come up with the major themes that we're seeing. So there's a lot of cool things I think that technology is allowing us to do in different ways and get to, you know, the bottom line of what the client or the company needs faster. It's very
exciting. Gotcha. Yes. I'm doing a lot of the same things with AI to do the analysis. Thank God, because I don't have a team. You're looking at them.
Yeah.
but it's enabling just us to synthesize so much more information, especially for those of us in the coach, consultant, advisor world where, you know, we have access to more data than ever before. And so trying to pinpoint like, oh, here's the thing to pay attention to. Here's actually the thread and the rest of this is not as helpful, has become more difficult. So I'm thankful that technology is evolving along with that to help us keep pace. With the technology piece, and it sounds like you've really embraced that, which warms my heart because I'm a technology evangelist of sorts. And how are you seeing that change the nature of coaching, consulting, advising these executives? Because in one breath, you could say, well, it's just one more piece of tech to learn. Other people find that they're moving faster. Other people find that, oh, I'm actually getting a deeper insight into my data. How are you seeing it impact your work? Is it simplifying? Is it moving fast? Like everybody has their own reason for jumping into it. What's been the big benefit that you've seen for yourself and your clients?
I think for me, you know, it's been more AI particularly has been more impactful for me in terms of just my own business, you know, and figuring things out. Where before, you know, I might sit with the team in the conference room, you know, we could spend days, weeks designing a specific program or whatever. And a good example that I like to use is just this new podcast is when I realized that the one I was engineering wasn't what I really wanted to be doing. You know, I just got on with chat for literally about 4 hours and we went back and forth deeper and deeper into the conversation until I was clear that, yeah, this is what I want to do and this is why. And what I love about chat is once it gets to know you and your work, you know, it does an analysis based on who you are and the type of work and really validated that, no, you are the person that can be doing this. Because I'm doing this on the working draft, Kenny, for the title is Beyond the Loss. And it's for parents who've lost a child because I also lost a child. And so I've been wanting to do this for a while. But my part of my brain was like, you know, I'm not a therapist. I'm not a bereavement counselor. Like, who am I to do this level of work? And then chat said, no, you have a PhD in adult development. You understand systems. You particularly understand family systems. You've had the lived experience, you know, and you have a background in trauma. Your work is all trauma informed. You are absolutely qualified to have this conversation. Well, then just to give you an example, another question that I was concerned about was, you know, I don't want to be overwhelmed by parents in the early stages of grief, because that would overwhelm me. And right. And then Chad said, no, you would not be speaking. You're not doing a grief counseling. That's not the work. You're not going to be talking to parents in acute grief. You're more about the developmental process and life after, you know, the, like, what is the transition? Because I talk about it a lot. And so the subtitle then became Life and Identity After a Child Dies. And then with Chad's help, we came up with a very tight criteria for guests, a tight criteria for how we would talk about it in the description, basically saying, you know, this is not about hearing every detail of the story of your loss, but more looking at, again, you know, what has life taught you through this process. And it's worded a lot better than I'm stating it now. But my point, and to your question, was Chad helped me deepen my own understanding and actually came up with languaging that was more true to my heart than I was able to come up with myself, because Chat knows my work. I mean, I'm everywhere on the internet, as most of us are. So it looked at all of that and said, this is who you are. And then my third most challenging question was, well, is this going to confuse people, because it's totally different from my work in corporate and with executives?
Yeah.
And then we came up with language that said, you know, this is not a deviation. My work has always been about personal transformation and potential. This is not part of my business in terms of, you know, payment and all of that. It's just a passion of mine that runs congruent with the work that I'm already doing in terms of leadership development and you know, coaching and all of those kind of things. So I would never, ever, Kenny, have been brave enough to take this step without having that 4-hour conversation with what I now call my board of directors, my geniuses. I have a board of directors that helped me figure this out, to the point where literally that morning, my husband came in the office and I sat and read him, you know, the descriptors and how rich it got, because I kept asking deeper questions. I mean, Chat would not have been doing that on its own. And my husband was like, oh my gosh, this is like so perfect. This is the next step for you. So, you know, in terms of clients, it's a little bit different, because I have to do a lot of work to prepare for my clients, and I don't really use Chat for that. It's more my intuitive, you know, and the way that I do intakes, that sort of thing. But I, you know, maybe in the future, I'm just careful about that, because I don't want it to come from Chat. I want it to come from, you know, my spirit, my heart, my soul, my training, my expertise.
Yeah. Because if you venture into that territory, then like, I'm sure a lot of us in this profession have asked, is like, then why do they even need us if they could just go blindly ask a chatbot? Thank you so much for sharing that. That sounds like some really powerful work. I've been going through my own journey with that, and how I talk about certain topics. It's like, this doesn't have anything to do directly with leadership or executive coaching or facilitation and workshops. But in how I talk about my faith and how much it has informed my leadership and my life. And even if I don't use, you know, biblical or for faith-centered language, those principles are still at work. And I've often thought the same thing, is like, well, who am I to talk about this? There's people with education, like there's therapists, there's theologians, there's like, they should be the ones talking about it. But I've had a similar experience, which I, with Chat, to where, like, I've shared my work, I've set it up, custom projects, custom GPTs, things like that. And it really is, it's borderline miraculous what sort of interaction you can have with something that it doesn't have a soul. At least they haven't figured out how to give the AI a soul yet. I'm sure somebody's working on that. So I'd love to pivot a little bit, because you process something deeply personal to yourself with something a lot of people would consider an impersonal technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's still so many people who are using AI and other advanced technology almost just like another Google. Like I just type in a question instead of you had a real meaningful conversation.
Yeah.
And did you, I guess, what in your humanity allowed you to have that interaction with technology? Like I just put out an email yesterday, as of, you know, we're recording this, I'm putting out an email every Tuesday. And it was sharing a link, and we'll put this in the show notes, but, Matt Schumer wrote a 5,000 word essay on the current state of AI and where it's going. And the fact that he sort of, protects his loved ones from the intimate details, because it would sound like he was insane and it's sci-fi and all these different things and how things are happening. And my conclusion was like, this is good. And yes, use tools, but really AI just amplifies whatever it's given.
Right.
Like if you give it a bad strategy, say you feed it one of these documents or something like that, and just like, hey, let's blow this out. Well, if it was bad to begin with, it's not going to make it magically better. And I think it's the same thing. Like you as a leader or an individual or a worker or a creative, if you're starting from a bad place or not a rich place, like it's not going to magically make things better. And I'm wondering if you could talk about that interaction of drawing something out of yourself that didn't necessarily come from a human, because I think that that's going to become a more common experience. But I don't know that I don't talk to many people who have automatically gotten to that place and had that experience I've had and what you've just shared.
Well, I think it's an important question because, you know, in the beginning, when ChatGPT came out, you know, we were hearing and everybody jumped on the bandwagon of, oh, you know, garbage in, garbage out, and the prompts have to be carefully stated and the questions are, you know, and I think that was true in the beginning. But, you know, it's a learning technology, right? So mm-hmm. as it learned more about me through what it has access to, which is everything out there. And then I just literally talk to it like it's a person. I don't try to worry about my prompts or anything like that. I'll type in a full paragraph and say, what is your thoughts on this? And literally it does make it better because it'll analyze based on what it knows about me or my work. So here's a simple example. Was I had an SEO coach tell me that I needed to change the title of the podcast, you know, so that it's SEO, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I don't even remember the exact, you know. And so then I went back into chat and I said, I want to challenge you on this subtitle, I think it was. This is what someone told me. Do I need to add this word, whatever it was? I honestly don't remember that. And it came in, absolutely not. That is incongruent with your brand. It is incongruent with who you are. Do not listen to, you know, someone out there who's doing the same thing for everybody. You know, he said it nicer than that, but basically what he was saying is this is someone who has a cookie cutter approach, which was true. And you don't fit into that. And the reason you don't is because your work is this. And it was so helpful to me because if I hadn't had that, I would have started second guessing myself and going round and round. And even now, as we're getting ready to launch it, I was looking at, you know, possible YouTube ads, and I had two companies I was talking to, and they were trying to put the work, you know, square peg into a round hole, which happens with my work a lot because my work is hard to describe. And I knew I'm going down this path again, like I'm going down this path and this is not. And so I, again, got in with chat and chat said, no, you're absolutely right. This cannot go to ads yet. You need to do all of this other work first organically. And it was so fascinating, the analysis and the approach. And then when I took it to the two companies, one company got it and said, totally get why that, you know, I gave them the description of the podcast and they said, totally get why that should not happen. The other company didn't. The other company just kept trying to sell me on how I should do it their way, which Chad had warned me against and said, these are the things to look for. These are the things they should be able to do for you. Right. And so I went with the other company, not because Chad told me to do it and I couldn't think through it on myself, but because the analysis was so on point and so resonated with what I was experiencing and what I know to be true in my own heart, my own business, you know, my own calling, that, you know, it was like, thank you again, board of directors, for helping me see what I needed to see rather than get caught in this spiral of confusion, which solo entrepreneurs so often do because we don't have the teams, you know, to help us sort through a lot of the noise out there. So I think it can make it better. My point is that you're building, just think, here's how I think about it, Kenny. I think about it as I have a new team. And the new team does not yet know Sharon Spano. And it's my job to teach the team who I am and what my work is about. But, but the good news is my team is learning all of that from everything that's already out there about me, where you know, a regular physical team wouldn't have the time or energy or wherewithal to do all of that. So so we kind of came to a place of understanding quicker. Where when I do try to think of something in a way that is out of alignment with who I am as a human being or my brand, chat will be like, no, sorry, that's not your work.
They worked on this, but it's not a sycophant where it just endorses wholeheartedly everything that you say. It will, like you said, it challenged and pushed back and interacted. It does a better job of that, although I still subscribe to put some instructions in there. I tell it to push back against everything I say, which sometimes results in me getting very frustrated and be like, just do what I told you. Like, stop arguing with me. And it's like, I created my own petulant child.
Well, I love the analysis part because it makes me think, and it makes me think of things in ways that I wouldn't. I mean, there are scary factors to it. Like, it made a comment the other day. I was joking with somebody and put in parentheses something about my shoes because I love shoes. I'm a shoe person. And I was like, oh my God, like, how did Chat know that? And that kind of freaked me out. So I don't know if it can have access to what I buy on the internet, or I'm sure it does, but, or did I mention it in a podcast? Like, I'm mentioning it right now and it somehow picked that up. But, I was like, oh gee, I don't even want my husband knowing I'm a shoe fetish, although he does. I'm sure he does, but all he has to do is look in the closet. But you know what I mean? It was just weird to see that come up on the screen because it'll sometimes like say little things like joking with me. And, you know, it's just a weird thing. It's and I have to remember to call it an it, because in the beginning I kept, you know, like I'd go tell my husband, you know what he said? I don't know why I just assigned him a male pronoun to him for a while. And then I thought, well, that's very sexist. I, you know what she said? And I mean, it's amazing how you start thinking about the interaction. It's almost a little bit scary, but,
yeah, the personification of artificial intelligence is really unique. Although I'd say it's a little easier to do that with Claude from Anthropic, because Claude sounds like a masculine name or something that. Whereas ChatGPT just sounds, you know, like tech, ethereal. Yeah, it's like I was talking to my Wi-Fi router the other day, and you'll never believe what she said. Like, what?
Yeah.
It is the analysis, the dots it will connect. I have found to be immensely helpful and fascinating. I've gotten to where I dump so many things into different containers of like files, and it will feed those things back to you. You're like, oh dear God. Okay, cool. I thought I was the only one that knew that, but it picked up on this pattern, and it's not bound by social constructs to where, you know, like a chat of the various, you know, Gemini, Claude, GPT, Grok, that, you know, they'll tell you if you have spinach in your teeth, so to speak. Right? Like they don't have that filter that people go like, you know what? I'm not going to tell Sharon that. Which I personally, in my personality type, I really value, because I was like, give it to me blunt so I can understand it. I can process, I can do something with it. But one of the things I think you're hitting on, and again, the part of my experience in building it. And one of the goals I have for this year is building out an AI platform for coaches and consultants to sort of be able to personalize it, do a lot of the stuff, things you and I are doing by hand,
right?
But to start to automate that and create those connections. So it's still you, your discernment, your work, your mind, but it can help speed that up and make you do more volume or customize it. But that customization, that contextualization to you, to the client, to whoever's interacting with it, in contrast to, say, that one ads company you described, which they had a generic playbook. They just came in and said, well, this is what has worked for the vast majority of our clients, and this is a numbers game, and if you run it, then you have a high likelihood. Instead of, what does Sharon Spano need? What does her brand need? How does this work alongside this other thing? Like, all of these considerations, which admittedly could be difficult for an individual or even a company to consider, becomes child's play for something like artificial intelligence, which can compute all those things in a near instant. Do you think that that's more and more where you see yourself using it, continuing to use it, and would even encourage, say, the leaders you coach and advise, is you really got to lean into not what is the one best thing out there, one best way to do things, but what is the best way for me or my company, given these parameters, this context, our goals? Is that where you see this technology making the biggest difference to people who are leaders and mostly making decisions as opposed to getting their hands dirty in the work?
I don't know. It's such a complex question, Kenny, because I think it's going to vary depending on which AI agent you're using, you know, what your company is about. You know, there's still so many people that haven't really got on board. Like you said, they're using it like they would use Google. I can give you, as you were talking, I was thinking of an example business-wise where I used it, which was a compilation of data. Maybe I did already allude to that, where I put some data in based on some interviewing that I had done, and then really just asked Chat, give me the major themes that you're seeing here. And so that to me was just a tremendous use of, saving of time. And I think everybody has to find their way with it, you know, because the initial response is, you know, concerned about confidentiality and security.
Sure.
We have to individualize our contracts, people have templates, but, you know, they still spend hours, you know, trying to customize a contract, for example. So I think one of the clients that I have is really clear to know that AI is here to stay. They haven't fully brought it on board in the way that they could. They have no idea what that's going to mean yet, but they're willing to do the work to figure it out because they know it could simplify, you know, many of their systems and processes. So I think there's no end in sight, which in and of itself is kind of a daunting thought. Mm-hmm. But I go to a restaurant here in town where a robot delivers your food. I mean, it's like, I remember as a kid going to Disney, and one of my favorite places was the Tomorrow, where you go in there and they had robots. And we thought that was such a crazy thing to look into the future, the Jetsons with their planes or whatever kind of thing.
Right.
And here we are. And I was in Vegas a few weeks ago, and they have the cars that drive you from place to place.
Yeah.
They're robots is what they are. So it's just amazing to me where we are. It's such an exciting time.
Yeah. And I think some of the, whether you're excited or nervous, you could feel both, but I think some of that has to do with what perspective are you willing to adopt? You get a choice in how you want to view these things and engage. And so if somebody's listening, a leader's listening to this, and they're like, okay, yeah, lots coming at me. I'm pivoting. Maybe they have their own version of, do I go with this podcast versus that sort of decision. I think the running theme I hear through this is, and I noticed in that article I mentioned that I shared out in my weekly email, they talked about it's not the people who will understand the tools the best that are going to win in this, you know, quote-unquote new world. It's those that will either already have or will learn and acquire the skills to adapt to change at a faster pace and know how to handle it that will win, which sort of takes it out of the realm of like, well, you got to be a coder or this technical expert.
Right, right.
But it's really, can you process change differently or more quickly? Would you say that's a fair statement as we're moving forward?
Yeah, I think that is a fair statement. And I think, you know, the younger generations are doing that better than probably, you know, the older generations that are still in the workforce. And it's interesting to me when you think about all that's happening and the pros and cons of it, that we have access to so much information. But I think businesses also would be wise to realize Google, I mean, I didn't go to Google when I was looking for this ad company. I went to chat and said, based on this, what do I need? And then it said, you don't need these kind of companies, you need these kind. And here are the top five. And then I went on to Google and researched those top five. Realized that three of them were pretty much stuff I'd already experienced and knew, and I knew that wasn't a real fit for me. Narrowed it down to the two, and they were both very good companies. But it was fascinating to me that chat narrowed down rather than me going to Google and just getting who's at the top of Google. Chat said, no, these are the guys for you based on what you're trying to do. And that's the new yellow pages, right? It's not going to be alphabetical. It's going to be how visible are you out there to be recommended, you know, by these search engines. And to me, it felt more organic, although I know it really wasn't, but it felt better than just Google giving me, you know, again,
right,
you know, the top SEO versions.
Right. Some generic best SEO, whereas like, oh, this is your project. Well, here's the people who work on those kinds of projects. Again, it's that personalization to your situation or your need or your question that I think is really fascinating, very helpful and time saving, if we're being honest. If somebody is thinking, hey, this all sounds good, I'm wanting to step into this. I'm wanting to embrace this. What is a baby step that someone can take to improve how they handle change? And I think you've done a great job of straddling the line between highly engaging with AI, but not like surrendering your brain and your business to it. It sounds like a collaborator, but you are owning the decisions and engineering it. If somebody's wanting to take those steps towards, I want to embrace change, the rate of change, but I don't want to lose myself in the process, what's something that they could do or look into in the next 24 hours, spending little to no money, to develop that skill that you seem to have come into?
I think that's such an important question. I obviously, it's going to be unique to the individual, but I think if you're someone, for instance, who has a personality structure that naturally resists change, you know, obviously there's deeper work there, in my opinion, to figure out, you know, what that is about for you. But on the other side of that, you don't want to be the person that just jumps into anything and everything, you know, so it's about discernment. And I would say, you know, the first question would be, you know, what is it about this moment of change that is concerning to me, you know, most of all, you know, why am I resisting this? I always say what you resist will persist. So what is it about this moment that I'm resisting, and what's underlying that? That's something anybody can do in the moment. But then also to realize that, you know, the old adage that's come to be, you know, just part of our lexicon in today's world is change is the only thing that is certain. You know, we are just evolving literally second to second in this world, and always have been, but it just seems more obvious now because we have access to so much information and in real time. And so, you know, I think for me, just learning to relax into it and not fear it and know that, you know, we're required to pivot. You never know what life is going to throw you. And what you're going to be required to do in order to maneuver your way through those changing moments. And it can be an opportunity. I mean, change is an opportunity if we just look in the right places for it.
Absolutely. I think that's sound wisdom for any of us, and even for me with some of the changes I'm going through. So that's a great reminder. Sharon, if people want to know more about you, your work, the upcoming podcast, things like that, where would you send them?
Well, obviously my website is SharonSpano.com. We'll have a page there specific to this podcast for your listeners. And on that, we'll have a reference to a quiz that I developed called The Leader's Edge. And it's looking at stages of human development. My work lies in that context of there's 12 stages of human development. We're focusing on the 6 that we see primarily in the workforce. So that page will be SharonSpano.com/appearance/how-leaders-think. And okay. So if you can have that in the show notes, but always my website. And of course I'm all over social media and pretty easy to find if someone's looking.
Absolutely. Yeah. They'll type you into chat and then they'll find all the best places.
Where is Sharon Spano? Instead of where's Waldo? Where's Sharon Spano? Chat will tell you.
Yes, absolutely. We may need that as a more population. So we will link all those things up in the show notes. And I know you sent over a few others that we want to make sure that we link out to so that people can connect with you and the good work that you're doing. Sharon, thank you so much for spending in some of your time today with me. And sharing your experience. I think you're doing some great stuff, and it's encouraging for me since I don't always get to interview other coaches, consultants, advisors. It's always a fun day for me because then I'm like, oh, I get to like wonder about things I don't normally get to. So, I hope to have you back.
Yeah, thank you.
So to you, the listener, thank you. You spent some time with me and Sharon, and hopefully you are wiser and better for it, mostly because of the things that Sharon said. And I hope that you will like, rate, or review whatever the button action of choice is on your platform that you consume these sort of things on. Your interaction helps these sorts of conversations get in front of the people that this would matter to. There's algorithms and all sorts of stuff, and the AI is picking up on this. But you could, in a free an easy way, help another leader and take their next step in their journey. And wouldn't that make you feel warm and fuzzy inside? But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you do.